time UNRWA was able to deliver food aid to northern Gaza was on January 23rd. At least 500,000 people are facing famine, while nearly the entire population of Gaza, 2.3 million people, is experiencing acute food shortages, figures from the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs show. In late February, at least two babies died of malnutrition and dehydration in Gaza. Aid organizations have warned that the Zionist regime's denial of food and water to the Palestinian enclave may amount to a crime against humanity. Randa Ghazi of NGO Save the Children said Gaza was witnessing the worst level of malnutrition worldwide. She told Middle East Eye, "Pregnant women are not receiving the nutrition and health care they need, making them more susceptible to disease and increasing risks of death during childbirth."
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
On Gaza continues unabated. Israel is pressing ahead with its systematic move to dehumanize the entire population of the Gaza Strip and destroy all aspects of life in the besieged territory. Piles of rubbish and solid waste are now a normal scene in Gaza's streets after Israeli forces targeted all parts of civil life in Gaza, including the municipalities, where dozens of the crews were killed. Waste storages and all related equipment, including waste collection vehicles, were also destroyed in the war and completely paralyzed.
Israeli forces targeted several vehicles used to remove the rubbish, as you can see over there. This left us paralyzed in handling the tremendous amounts of the rubbish left by the displaced people crammed in the central area. We demand that all international bodies help by providing us with the needed equipment and vehicles.
Not only did the deliberate Israeli attacks against the municipalities cause this crisis, but Israeli prevention of delivery of fuel needed to operate the vehicles and equipment worsened the problem. This caused rubbish and waste to pile up on the streets and in shelters.
This is a big problem we have been suffering from since the beginning of the war on Gaza. The rubbish is scattered everywhere in the vicinity of the hospital, which causes a lot of diseases for people, particularly the children.
Infectious diseases are ravaging Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as the health system collapsed by the war. And dire conditions and scarcity of food and clean water have set off a public health crisis. The Gaza Health Ministry, alongside many international organizations, has called for an end to the catastrophe that is looming in terms of the infectious diseases that began to spread on a wide scale among the displaced Palestinians. Hundreds of thousands of those people, mostly women and children, were now diagnosed with contagious diseases like hepatitis and intestinal diseases.
More than 150 days of this war led to mass displacement of the people who crammed in the evacuation centers without having a real access to the hygiene and cleanliness. This caused a lot of infectious diseases, particularly among the children. Needless to mention the severe shortage of the medical supplies and assistance amid the overwhelming number of injuries inflicted by the Israeli attacks.
Months-long incessant Israeli bombardments have put the vast majority of the health facilities out of service. This as limited sanitation facilities and overcrowding shelters are causing the spread of disease and keeping Gaza from recovering.
It's another dark side of the deep catastrophe that still afflicts the Palestinian people as a result of the ongoing apocalyptic Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. While the outcries of the Palestinian civilians are still unanswered and muted by the American veto. Abu Musabbih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
Did
discussing legal avenues to stop the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Adamant about finding a way to end the catastrophe in Gaza, Iran's Red Crescent Society brought together legal experts from 21 countries in Tehran to attend an international congress on the occupation of Palestine, with a special focus on Israeli violations of international humanitarian law.
Today, what's happening in Gaza is beyond words. Terms such as war crimes are simply not enough to describe what the Zionists are doing. It's been over 5 months, and more than 30,000 people have been killed. The least Muslim countries can do is completely cut off their ties and trade with the Zionists.
A stance that was reiterated by every single speaker of the conference.
Legal experts have been voicing their support for Palestinians. What is happening in Gaza is against everything we know to be the pillars of modern society, violating the Geneva Convention, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and international humanitarian law.
The Universal Declaration of Human Rights and international humanitarian law clearly gives the right to Palestinians. The Israelis are violating the Geneva Convention day in and day out. They should be held accountable for all these crimes in an international tribunal.
We're very clear that the United Nations, the Security Council, at this stance is politicized.
So far, calls to allow food distribution in Gaza have been denied, and there have been numerous warnings against a looming famine. With more than 40,000 online participants from different cities in Iran and around the world, the call for change can be clearly heard.
The participants are demanding accountability. They say today the same countries that wrote the Geneva Convention and the international organizations that claim to be advocates of human rights are silent in the face of Israeli atrocities in Gaza. However, with public opinion shifting against the Israeli regime, this conference could be a first step in creating the kind of change the international community wants to see. Gizum Shahmadi, Tehran.
After days of pause in Yemen's naval operations, the spokesman for the Yemeni army announced the successful targeting of an Israeli ship in the Arabian Sea with multiple missiles. He said that the attack followed the drone and missile strikes against U.S. warships in the Red Sea.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces launched an attack on the Israeli ship MSC Sky sailing in the Arabian Sea with a number of appropriate naval missiles. The missiles hit the vessel in an accurate and direct manner. The operation came only hours after Yemen's armed forces targeted a number of enemy American warships in the Red Sea with a number of ballistic missiles and drones.
Experts say this operation sends a message to the US and UK that Yemen's armed forces are still capable of targeting Israeli-bound vessels in the regional waters. Despite their aggression against Yemen, they believe that the Yemeni army has not used its new weapons yet, which will be another challenge for the Western powers.
Yesterday's operations and the targeting of the Israeli ship and the American warships is a message that the Yemeni armed forces will continue their operations against the enemy. No matter what the Americans do, whether political or military moves, we will continue with our strategic options until the aggression against our brothers in Gaza stops. The Yemeni army will carry out more strikes and still has big surprises for the enemy in the coming days, unless the enemy stops the brutal aggression against Gaza.
On Saturday, the British cargo ship Ruby Mar, which had been targeted by the Yemeni army last month, sank in the Red Sea. The sinking of the Ruby Mar has raised concerns about the potential ecological damage to the Red Sea and its coral reefs, as it was carrying more than 41 tons of fertilizer and had leaked oil for several days after the attack.
Yemeni officials hold the US and UK fully responsible for any pollution resulting from the sinking of the British ship. They assert that Washington is the one militarizing the Red Sea, supporting the Israeli war on Gaza and depriving Palestinians of humanitarian aid, which are the main reasons for Yemeni naval operations. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The right to speak out, to protest. the very fabric of democratic rights, once again under attack in the UK, as the government updates its definition of extremism and is about to introduce a potential ban on parliamentarians joining protests. Recommendations from the government's advisor on political violence, John Woodcock, also known as Lord Walney, who is a former chair of Labour Friends of Israel, call on leaders of the mainstream political parties to instruct their MPs to employ a zero-tolerance approach to groups that use disruptive tactics or fail to stop, quote, hate on marches. In the crosshairs, climate activist groups such as Extinction Rebellion and Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who have organized the enormous peaceful mobilizations for Gaza since October last year.
This is an affront to democracy and an indication of a weak and decaying government's descent into authoritarianism. It's totally out of touch with the British people and actually very much out of keeping with the British values that they claim to champion.
Ahead of Walney's recommendations, and after the by-election in Rochdale, Greater Manchester, that handed pro-Palestine campaigner George Galloway a thumping victory, a speech by the Prime Minister vilifying the pro-Palestinian protests demanding a ceasefire in Gaza.
In recent weeks and months, we have seen a shocking increase in extremist disruption and criminality. What started as protests on our street has descended into intimidation, threats, and planned acts of violence.
Critics say comments like those about peaceful demonstrations are a threat to the long tradition of freedom of protest and expression in the country.
His assertions are totally false. I mean, you know, the claims of an increase in anti-Semitism, of extremism, there is no evidence for that. I mean, this is just pure invention and another indication, frankly, of how weak this government really is. To have a special address to the nation as if there was some sort of state of emergency. Some people that spoke to me thought that we'd declared war on Russia. What it was George Galloway, the leader of the Workers' Party, getting elected as a Member of Parliament. I mean, that should be celebrated, not attacked in that way. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
The new changes are yet to be announced and legislated, but the political temperature is rapidly rising in the UK.
In its 2024 World Report, Human Rights Watch says that the UK government's practices and policies have severely curtailed domestic human rights protections. Others say the country is at risk of turning into a police state masquerading as a democracy. The question now is, how deep will those erosions go? And will the MPs in the building behind me allow them to continue? Saeed Pourreza, London.
Iran has held a final round of a national moot court to stimulate taking proceedings against enforcers of unilateral sanctions and those who comply with them. The session was held by Iran's Institute of Judiciary in cooperation with the country's High Council for Human Rights in Tehran. Speaking at the event, the secretary of Iran's High Council for Human Rights, Kazem Gharibabadi, said that sanctions were considered weapons of war and even more destructive than a war due to their substantial impacts and being a collective punishment against a targeted country's people.
Undeniable rights cannot be ignored in sanctions, and implementing global peace and security cannot be possible without taking such rights into consideration. The legality of the legitimacy of sanctions is an important issue that the Security Council must consider in the discussion of imposing sanctions. Meanwhile, the international community has not yet accepted the legitimacy of unilateral sanctions.
Elena Duhan, UN Special Rapporteur on the negative impact of unilateral coercive measures on the enjoyment of human rights, also delivered a speech at the session via video conference.
In the situation of Iran, the most absurd cases refer to the impossibility to deliver bandages for EB patients from the only monopolist producer in Sweden, and similarly impossibility to deliver the medicine necessary for thalassemia patients suffering from some sort of autist state, as well as some sort of psychological and physical diseases, especially if we are talking about the rare ones or the most severe ones. As a result, these are patients which are not directly designated by any type of sanctions, which are deprived of any possibility of access to health care system.
Meanwhile, speaking at the session, Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Ali Bagheri-Kani said sanctions were the biggest crimes against humanity and were a collective punishment and proof that those who pursue and promote unilateralism do not respect human rights.
Iran is among the countries under the U.S. cruel sanctions, which is making efforts to restore the country's rights as a national duty. Sanctions arise from the international behavior and phenomena, and they disturb the future security and stability of the world. For a country which imposes sanctions, international law or human rights are not important.
Iran has been under U.S. sanctions for the past 4 decades. The sanctions intensified following the U.S. unilateral withdrawal from a 2015 nuclear deal in May 2018, formerly known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action.
Iranian authorities have repeatedly blamed the U.S. sanctions for shortage of medicines that treat special diseases like cancer. Health officials have warned that the harm caused by U.S. sanctions on Iran's access to pharmaceutical supplies may even get worse in the future. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem stressed the readiness of the Lebanese resistance to face any possible Israeli aggression against Lebanon. He said any Israeli act of aggression would trigger an advanced version of the 2006 war, when the Tel Aviv regime suffered a humiliating defeat at the hands of Hezbollah.
The Zionist enemy continues to threaten us with military aggression. We respond by means of steadfastness, resistance, and retaliatory strikes. We hereby declare that if they commit a foolish act and attack our territories, there would then be a new version of the July 2006 war.
He warned Israelis that Hezbollah would fight in an even more sophisticated manner in any future confrontation, stressing that the outcome will eventually be a victory for the resistance fighters. Sheikh Qasem was speaking at the 6th International Conference for the Union of Resistance Scholars in Lebanon's capital, Beirut. Representatives of the Palestinian resistance factions also stressed that the United States' all-out support for the Israeli warmongering policies has given a cover to the Israeli regime to continue its atrocities as its genocidal Gaza war has marked 150 days. Hamas official Osama Hamdan stressed that Muslim nations are duty-bound to foil U.S.-Israeli plots against war-torn Gaza.
It is the duty of Arabs and Muslims worldwide to take the initiative and foil Israel's conspiracy of starvation. The countries neighboring the Gaza Strip must not stand idly by and should take a concrete measure, especially for Gazans in the north.
Scholars and thinkers from diverse Muslim countries have come together to voice their support for the Palestinian people and the resistance. They sent a message of solidarity for Palestinians in war-torn Gaza as Israel's unbridled and unfazed brutality continues unabated.
50 scholars, top scholars from 25 countries, they are gathered here, and hopefully they will reach to any kind of the solution, kind of support and solidarity for the people.
The Palestinians are sending a very strong message. That, look, you be answerable to this. You know, the accountability is not only in Israel who are the murderers, but accountability should also be there among the Muslims. Why are you not doing anything? So that's why Palestinians are giving that voice. They are struggling. They are saying they're going to fight to the end. And therefore, they say, if you want to help, it's your responsibility. It's not we appealing.
With the Israeli regime's genocidal war in Gaza now in its 5th month and over 30,000 civilian fatalities, scholars in Beirut assert that the resistance in the region has no choice but to continue its armed struggle until the final victory.
The Muslim clerics in support of the resistance have stressed through their discussions and meetings here in Beirut that the Palestinian cause is a reason for unity and solidarity. They say the teachings of the Quran have drawn a roadmap for supporting the Palestinian people in their struggle to free a land considered holy to all Muslims. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
A series of restrictions were imposed on the Yemeni economy following the U.S. redesignation of the Ansarullah movement as a terrorist group earlier this year. This blacklisting has had an impact on the humanitarian situation in the war-torn country, where millions of people are in dire need of aid.
Ansarullah,
Ansarullah, as a political component, has no external economic relations or companies in the private sector that have real weight in the national economy. The real goal of the resolution is to blackmail Ansarullah and distort their position in support of Gaza. The Yemeni economy has been in a state of siege for 9 years, and therefore, the American measures putting pressure on the local economy, we believe, will not have much effect, especially since the Yemeni economy has withstood pressure over the past years and adapted to the measures imposed by the exiled Yemeni government in Riyadh. The Central Bank of Yemen will also work to impose procedures to secure the transfer of foreign exchange to and from Yemen.
Several international companies, including the money transfer company Western Union, have suspended their activities in Yemen, severely affecting the livelihoods of most Yemenis who rely on financial support from relatives abroad. Experts predict that such actions will lead to the creation of a black market for those benefiting from the suspension of money transfers.
The United States of America imposed collective punishment on the Yemeni people. Very important financial channels were stopped, such as Western Union, which is one of the most important money transfer networks in the world, and through it, Yemeni expatriates in American and European countries used to send money to their families in Yemen easily. We have 6 million expatriates outside the country, and thousands of Yemeni families depend on them to provide a living. You can imagine what the situation will become after these financial transfers stop. The beneficiaries of this measure are black market workers who exploit these circumstances by deducing a percentage of their remittances and transfer them through illegal channels.
In an effort to deter Yemen's naval operations against vessels linked to the United States, the United Kingdom, and Israel in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden, the U.S. Department of State blacklisted the Ansarullah movement as a specially designated global terrorist group. However, this designation has primarily affected the humanitarian situation, as members of the Ansarullah movement have no investments abroad.
Observers believe that Washington's recent measures are aimed at inciting the Yemeni people to take to the streets in opposition to the Ansarullah movement as a strategic move to undermine the group's popularity in the country. But that plot does not look like it will succeed, given the widespread support for Ansarullah in Yemen. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. Limelight.
Experts say the Zionist regime's plans and ambitions in the Eastern Mediterranean will not be complete unless it confiscates Gaza's gas field, but to no avail. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, "The terrifying scale of the destruction the Zionist regime's war machine has wrought in Gaza indicates that the goal of this onslaught is not merely to destroy the resistance movement Hamas. Rather, we can infer that this aggression has been a long time coming, as the Zionist regime waited for an opportune time to unleash its full military force against the besieged Palestinian territory. Some have argued that the Zionist regime's goal is to push the population of Gaza into the Sinai, and the October 7th events provided the pretext for this operation to begin in earnest. Zionism, as an ideology, is based on the displacement of landowners through intimidation and cutting off vital infrastructure, paving the way for Israeli settlers to move in. But there is another, more important reason behind the Zionist regime's current war. The promising natural gas wealth found in Eastern Mediterranean, specifically off the coast of Gaza. The Levant gas field includes the shores of historic Palestine, Syria, Lebanon, and the opposite side, the island of Cyprus. This field is estimated to contain about 122 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. As for the Palestinian shores of Gaza, British Gas confirmed in 1999 that the reserves in Gaza Marine are estimated at 1.1 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. That same year, the Palestinian Authority granted British Gas a 25-year contract to exploit the Gaza Marine natural gas field. Until now, after 25 years, the Palestinians have never benefited from it. This is due to the obstacles that the Zionist regime placed under many pretexts, including, for example, the fear that the revenues will go to finance terrorism against the Zionist regime. Several Israeli regime governments, from Ehud Barak to Benjamin Netanyahu, have given approval to the Palestinians on several occasions to begin exploiting the Gaza Marine. However, every time, the Zionist regime retracted its approval. It is obvious the Zionist regime is keen not to give the Palestinians any sense of sovereignty over their land or territorial waters, which is further evidence of Israel's premeditated intentions to displace the Palestinians from their historical lands and confiscate their natural resources. In addition to Gaza's natural gas, it is worth pointing out that the Zionist regime is stealing Palestinian natural gas from the Minged oil and gas field in the occupied West Bank on the pretext that the field is located to the west of the Armistice Line of 1948. While the Zionist regime has never been serious about the so-called peace process or the Palestinian right to independence and self-determination, Netanyahu has taken an exceptionally hard line. The regime's longest-serving leader chose the path of economic peace. At the same time, he has focused on mega-projects tailored primarily to benefit Israelis, while potentially offering secondary benefits to the Palestinian population. In this regard, he has focused on two main areas: transforming Israel into a gateway and corridor linking East and West, and making the regime a global center for natural gas exports. On the first goal, the centerpiece is planned India-Middle East-Europe Economic Corridor, or IMEC, which will connect India with Europe via the Persian Gulf and Israel. In addition, amid the ongoing risk of attacks in the Red Sea, Egypt and the UAE have worked with the Zionist regime to establish an alternative land route with Saudi Arabia and Jordan to bypass the Yemeni threat. As for the second goal, Israel has made significant efforts to conclude gas deals with Cyprus, Greece and Egypt. But Israel's plans and ambitions in this regard will not be complete unless it confiscates Gaza's gas reserves. Netanyahu has made clear his intentions to bypass the aspirations of the Palestinian people, having noted last year that they should be part of the peace process, but they should not have a veto over the process. The Zionist regime's desire to seize Gaza gas can partially explain Netanyahu's intransigence when it comes to ceasefire initiatives. At this project hinges on Israel maintaining security control over the territory and expelling the Palestinian population. The Zionist regime's ministers have spoken openly about these goals since the start of the war. Among the evidence that proves the validity of this analysis are two important matters. First, it is surprising that Israel has granted licenses to three companies to explore for natural gas in the marine area off the shores of Gaza and Israel. This Israeli move confirms that Israel's deliberate intention to steal the Palestinians' natural gas wealth, reasoning that Gaza, Palestine, is not a sovereign state and therefore has no right to demand sovereignty over the special economic zone according to the law of sea, although Palestine has been accepted as an observer member of the UN in 2012. The Zionist regime has not yet signed the UN Convention on the Sea and has not even demarcated its maritime borders. The Zionist regime is aware of the enormous amount of political support it enjoys from the Western Europe and the United States. These actors just participated in the latest Munich Security Conference, whose main focus was on the normalization between the Zionist regime and Arab states by expanding the Abraham Accords. The Zionist regime views the resistance movement Hamas and all Palestinian resistance groups as a bottleneck to its greater regional ambitions, most notably the seizure of Gaza's natural gas wealth. Ultimately, the goal of an independent Palestinian state, or at least one in which Palestinians can control their own natural resources, is attainable. But first, they must withstand the Zionist regime's onslaught in Rafah. This could be Israel's last chance to displace the Palestinian population of Gaza.
The Spotlight.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story. In
what is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello, welcome to The Spotlight. I'm Kabet Afwai. What's happening in the Gaza Strip is reminiscent of the starved Yemeni children, a war that was backed and supported by the U.S. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinians are dying of hunger, especially children, in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. 500,000 Palestinians are fighting for their lives from starvation. There now is no doubt that Israel, backed by the U.S., is using food as a weapon of war, a war crime in itself. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at how systematically Israel is ethnically cleansing Palestinians, even though there is a ceasefire agreement that is being discussed, although chances of that is very thin. First, let me introduce our guests for this edition of The Spotlight. Mukhabar Abu Saida is a professor of political science at Al-Azhar University, who joins us from Cairo. Also joining us is Daniel Shaw, academic and commentator, who joins us from New York. Gemma, welcome. It's another grim day for the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, but we're looking at the starvation factor here. 2.4 million Palestinians, roughly. Mukhabar Abu Saida, I'm going to start with you first. Of which 500,000 are fighting for their lives due to starvation. The food insecurity obviously engulfs the entire population. UNRWA has said it has not been able to deliver food in over a month. There is aid going in, but not only does it not reach the Palestinians, when it does, they get killed in the process. Do you think that Israel is using food as a weapon, which is a war crime in itself, against the Palestinian population?
Well, good evening. The quick answer to your question is yes. This is what Israel has been doing for the past 5 months, especially against the Palestinians who are stuck and trapped in the north of Gaza, who did not leave at the beginning of this war 5 months ago, and now they are very much trapped and stuck in the north of Gaza. And very much Israel doesn't allow humanitarian assistance and food to reach to the north of the Gaza Strip. And to the best of my knowledge, some Palestinians have died as a result of hunger, and also many hundreds of thousands of Palestinians in the north of Gaza are eating animals' food. They have been eating tree leaves to try to survive. The situation there is very catastrophic. I have two brothers who are still based in the north of Gaza. Sometimes I talk to them whenever there are communications with them, mobile communications. The situation is more than catastrophic, more than tragic. One simple reason, Israel is very much using hunger and starvation as a weapon to try to drive the Palestinians from the north back to the south. Even though it's been 5 months since this, since Israel has started this military operation against the Palestinians in Gaza, it seems to me that Israel is still insisting on evacuating the north of Gaza from the Palestinians and drive them to the south, even though their life or their livelihood in the south is not going to be better. Roughly 1.5 million Palestinians in Rafah in the south of Gaza are also facing death and facing Israeli pounding day after day. It's a very catastrophic situation. And the least I can say about that, what the International Court of Justice said about a month ago, what Israel is doing, there is a plausible reason to believe that Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza. That's the least that can be said about what is happening now.
Did you say that you have two brothers that are in the north of the Gaza Strip?
Yes, yes, I do have two brothers with their families are still in the north of Gaza, yes.
All right, we're going to get into that a little bit because that's where the core of the 500,000 Palestinians who are dying of starvation is. But Daniel Shah, when you take a look at what Israel is doing, another prevention are the aid trucks. There are roughly 2,000 aid trucks that are at the crossings that are not being allowed to get into the Gaza Strip. And if there are aid trucks that are going into the Gaza Strip, they target the aid trucks where the most recent one, where two occasions of massacres happened, but the one that caught the world's attention, that's now being labeled as the Flower Massacre. Bullets were discovered on the ones that were killed. What is the story with that? Why would they do that, do you think?
Colonialism is humiliation. Colonialism is complete control. It was with French colonialism in Algeria. It was with the British and Dutch Afrikaners in South Africa. It was with the U.S. Attacks against Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, the dirty war against Syria, the sanctions against Iran and Venezuela. And it's no different with Israeli Zionism against the Palestinian people since 1948. It's been a long, slow, and now accelerated process of ethnic cleansing, of apartheid. The fact that we have to even say these words out loud in 2024, it harkens back to 1492 and to 1620 when the pilgrims first massacred the Wampanoags. And to think that so many of our people across the United States, across the quote-unquote Western world, still stand on the side of colonialism, white supremacy, and Zionism is unconscionable for me. You know, the Holocaust is being televised. The genocide is being televised. There's no excuse to not look at alternative sources of information. We know that the Zionists have done everything to control the narrative over this. And when we make that point, they accuse us of anti-Semitic tropes for telling the truth. But the point is that the mainstream media, from CNN to Fox to the New York Times, is completely complicit in this genocide, and history is recording this.
Taking a look at what the U.S. Role is over here, let's go back to the most recent active role that the U.S. played when it comes to food, Mukhabir Abbasada, and that is the food drop that took place, airdropping and parachuting these parcels. 38,000, we understand, sandwiches and dates, I believe. And you're looking at the 500,000 that are dying of starvation with 2.4 million who are hungry. Why do you think the U.S. would do something like that, the ratio being so low in terms of the number of food parcels, knowing that there's so many that are dying as a result of starvation?
Well, that definitely is a very good question here. Well, let me say that I think the U.S. decided at the end of the day to airdrop food for the starving Palestinians in the Gaza Strip for two reasons. One is that the massacre that took place on the early morning of last Thursday, a week ago, which, as you mentioned, you refer to it as the flower massacre or the flower carnage that Israel was responsible for, that led to the death of more than 100 Palestinians and the injury of many hundreds of others. According to reports from the U.S., that the U.S. administration was not happy with the Israeli government that is not allowing food to reach to the north. So the U.S. decided to airdrop food, which didn't really mean a lot for the thousands of Palestinians who are hungry and starving in the north of Gaza. And second, I think it's more of like a PR campaign by the U.S. The U.S. Internally, among the American people who believe that this current administration led by President Joe Biden has done a very poor job when it comes to the Palestinians and helping the Palestinians who are facing death and starvation. And also, I think the U.S. is trying to improve its image among the region, among the residents of the Middle East region, who basically look at the U.S. as a partner and at least a complicit in this war of genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza. And I think the U.S. decided to do that to try to make itself look much better. But again, as you just mentioned, the amount of food which was dropped by the U.S. on areas of the Gaza Strip doesn't satisfy the minimum need of the hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who are hungry. And if they are not dying of Israeli pounding, they are, some of them are now dying of hunger and starvation.
All right, Daniel Shah, to dig deeper into this, you know, this is a very calculated move. This 38,000 figure, I don't think this figure just came out of the blue. I'm sure there were some who sat and analyzed the situation and figured out a number that needs to be airdropped, knowing full well that this is not going to meet the standards and the demand that's on the ground. Do you think that perhaps the U.S., in consultation with Israel, wants the starving Palestinians to be used as a tool in order to convince Hamas, you know, this truce talks, ceasefire talks that are happening, to convince Hamas to agree to this temporary ceasefire, that maybe it's using that as a tool?
Zionism, with full U.S. backing, is using any tools that they can. This is an informational war on Palestine, and it has been since 1948. Of course, it's a military war. They're now using starvation and dehydration on day 154 against 2.3 million civilians. And we don't hear the Zionists ever recognize, and they never will, the humanity of Palestinians. They label every single Palestinian baby, child, teenager, mother, elder, family member as Hamas, Hamas, Hamas. No one stopped to ask on the Zionist side, do the Palestinians have a right to defend themselves? They always talk about the Israeli right to violence and self-defense. Well, what about the oppressed? What about the occupied? What about the colonized? The world is fully awake, the Muslim world, the Arab world, the third world. But here I'm in New York City and across the United States, there's such a dictatorship over information, over the media. They pretend to believe in democracy. But they don't, because overwhelmingly, specifically among young people, this genocide is extremely unpopular. And now they're going after TikTok. They've threatened to come after our TikTok at Midwestern Marks and many other organizations. So I think the hypocrisy for them to talk about freedom of speech and freedom of press And certainly this number of 38,000 meals is extremely paltry. But I think they're doing it, too, so they can try to cover their backsides and one day say, well, look, we had these airlifts, so we were not complicit in the starvation and Holocaust of the Palestinian people in Gaza.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Bukhari Abu Saida, let me ask you this. Do you think people understand the scale of the involvement of the U.S. when it comes to this genocidal war? I mean, just the day before, the report came out that the U.S. has quietly approved and delivered more than 100 separate foreign military sales, amounting to thousands of precision-guided bombs, munitions, all kinds of bunker buster bombs, etc. I mean, this is the reason why, in one way form or another, there are starving Gazans. Okay? So the U.S. is complicit in that regard because of this military assistance to a large degree. What do you think about the fact that the U.S. has continually provided Israel with military assistance?
Well, of course the Palestinian people know about the U.S. role in this war. Of course the Palestinian people know that the U.S. is more than complicit. The U.S. in other ways is a partner to this Israeli killing an Israeli pounding of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And I can tell you for a number of reasons. First, the U.S. has used its veto power three times. Since the start of this war on October 7th until now, the U.S. has used its veto power three times to block any U.N. resolution at the U.N. Security Council to reach an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and put an end to this Israeli genocide and Israeli killing of the Palestinians. Second, from the beginning of this war, Israel deployed its warplane carriers in the Mediterranean to try to deter other countries or other non-state actors to get involved in this war between Israel and the Palestinian resistance. And also, as you just mentioned, the U.S. has also supplied Israel with a lot of weaponry. Ships and airplanes full of ammunition and weapons have been provided to Israel over the past 5 months. And in addition to that, the U.S. is repeating day after day that Israel has the right to defend itself. Israel has the right to defend itself. Israel has the right to do whatever it finds it. I mean, lately we just started to hear that the U.S. patience with Netanyahu and the right wing in Israel is fading away as a result of extreme right-wing policies by Netanyahu's partner in this government. But yes, the Palestinian people, they are aware of the fact that the U.S. has been helping Israel politically, economically, and militarily. And it's, I mean, in the age of social media and the age of information revolution, I think you cannot really hide what the U.S. has been doing. Not during this war, but even before the war erupted, or before this war erupted in October 7th.
The ceasefire talks that are taking place, which are hanging by a thread, Daniel Shah, has a lot of sticking points and divisive issues in it. One of them is the request by Hamas for this to be a permanent ceasefire, but yet Israel and the U.S. are adamant about it being a partial ceasefire, not a permanent one. Why is there such an insistence on that, do you think, by the U.S. side?
Yeah, one is left to wonder. I mean, the U.S. government has the highly paid intelligence experts who are monitoring 25 hours per day, 8 days a week, everything that goes on, not just in Palestine, but in Ukraine and Taiwan and Guyana, and always waging these proxy wars. Why would they want an all-out genocide of an indigenous people of the Middle East on Biden's record, on the U.S. government's record? Well, that's because whether it's Biden or I think Trump to a lesser extent, liberalism is hegemony. And liberalism corresponds to the needs and the profits of the Lockheed Martins, of the General Dynamics, of these massive military corporations. That's why you have 100 secret weapon sales. That's why they're trying to push forward $14 billion more for the Israeli General Sidez, and then for the proxy war, $60 million more, even though it's still been caught up in the House of Representatives. And to be demanding a ceasefire after 154 days of genocide, I mean, this is not an outlandish demand. This is really asking for crumbs. I mean, humanity is asking for the Palestinians to have a place to breathe. Humanity is asking for a Palestinian state and Palestinian self-determination. So the fact that we can't even get ceasefire, even though we have millions of people mobilized across Western Europe, across Africa, across New York City, the entire world is standing up against the U.S. and Israeli axis of genocide and demanding justice. The fact that they are continue to ignore us shows you how unpopular the U.S. government is in the world. And this is going to have a colonial boomerang of violence effect in the upcoming days, months, and years. Who could ever trust the Israelis again? Just when the Israelis were thought that they could sit down with the Saudis and with other neighbors, the Israelis have shown just how unneighborly and genocidal they are.
Israel's economy is not doing well. Mukhabir Abu Masada, just to change gears here, and we're looking at a warning to the Prime Minister Netanyahu by the U.S. Treasury Secretary, who told him, listen, you got to make sure that the economy in the West Bank is going to flow, that it's not going to tank. This is pretty interesting, because if it's issuing that warning to Netanyahu, doesn't that mean that if the West Bank falls apart and goes into the direction of the Gaza Strip, which at this point is in crisis levels now with the killings and the abductions, etc., don't you think that that poses an existential threat to Israel when its economy is not doing well and the West Bank economy is teetering on that as well?
Well, what I can tell you about that is that the U.S. is trying to do its best to stabilize the West Bank and to keep also Jerusalem, East Jerusalem, under control. The last thing that the U.S. and Israel would like to see, especially during the month of Ramadan, which is approaching in a few days, is instability in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, which, by the way, Israel is sometimes trying to provoke the Palestinians through its incursions and into West Bank cities like Jenin, Nablus, and other Palestinian cities, trying to provoke the Palestinians into a new intifada or an eruption of violence against Israel. And as I mentioned, that would be the last thing that the U.S. would like to see, in addition to what did to the carnage and the genocide that is taking place in the Gaza Strip. And I think the U.S. has